request for this morning before we get started with the Sunday school lesson. Do remember Virginia Davis. She's been in the hospital at Fry this week with congestive heart failure. They did remove a lot of fluid from around her heart and her lungs, but she still has some fluid and they want to keep her until they can get it completely off. So just continue to remember her. It's good to see Mickey and Johnny. He's been healing up from a fall that he had last week, so he's improving. So just continue to keep both of them in your prayers. It's good to see if they were able to be with us this morning. Do remember Johnny Huffman as he continues his radiation treatments, and just continue to keep him in your prayers. Do remember to keep Holly Leo and Randy and the boys in your prayers as she continues her treatments as well. And then remember Brenda Hudson and Henry Hudson in prayers as well. And then Helen Bivens is still at Grace Heights, and Grace Heights has actually opened up visitation for anyone. So if you do want to go by and see Helen, she's in room 115. Visiting hours are from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. But do continue to remember her in your prayers as well as Ken, he's been sick some this week as well. Do remember Margie Austin, and she's still at the Bryan Center. And continue to pray for her. Remember Beverly as well. Continue to pray for her. Just keep all these in your mind as you pray. And then do remember on our website, there's many other prayer requests that we need to take note of, and just continue to check back there from time to time as things do occur during the week. And you can see the latest requests there. So let's do remember these. Our lesson this morning is entitled Gideon Destroys Baal's Altar. Kind of a lesser known story about Gideon. Most people remember his commission by God to serve him and to honor him as he was hiding in the wine press, threshing wheat, hiding from the Midians. And oftentimes we think about all these times in the Bible, especially in the book of Judges, how Israel is oppressed and continually turns back to God. God relieves that oppression, and then they turn back into their wicked ways. And usually it's the idolatry that gets them into trouble. They turn away from God and start serving other gods, and then they get oppressed. And we are probably quickly going to start to understand and realize what oppression is really all about. You and I have been widely immune to oppression. We've not seen it in this country. We've not experienced it like in other countries and like in biblical times. But I'm afraid that may be coming to an end. We may see that oppression come on us. And it's not a time to turn away from God and turn away from the things of God and abandon the things of God when we get a little oppression, when our jobs disappear, when a lot of things or ways of life that we have experienced kind of crumble and go to the wayside. It's not a time to turn our back on God and turn away from God. And that's what we see the Israelites often clung to those things. Even though they were in the midst of oppression, they still did not turn away from their idol worship. They still did not turn back to God the way they should have until they experienced several years of it. And I think they'd been in several years of this, 7 years of this, before God heard the cries of his people, that they started calling out to him and desiring to turn back to him. And he called Gideon to serve him. But here, in this phase, God has already made his presence known to Gideon. An angel has already come and visited him. He's already consumed the gift that Gideon had prepared as a show that God was truly speaking with him, that this was really a message from God. Gideon went in and prepared a kid, and prepared some cakes of food, just like you'd serve to an honored guest. And the angel had him lay it on a rock, and God consumed it with fire. Letting him know that he had accepted his offering and that God was the one that was speaking to him. Oftentimes when we think about Gideon, we think about the fleece that he throwed out, that there'd be dew all around it, but the fleece would be dry. The first time, I think the fleece was wet and the ground was dry all around it, and he run a bowl full of water out of the fleece. That's how much God had showed him that he was who he said he was, and he was calling him to defeat the Midianites. And then Gideon wanted him to do it one more time to make the ground all wet, but the fleece dry. And God did that. God was always available to Gideon to prove himself to him. That's not an example for you and I that we should be asking God to prove himself to you and I. But it's strange that God did that for Gideon because he knew how Gideon was. And Gideon required a sign. Even the night that they were getting ready to have victory, God called out to Gideon and said, "Go down to the camp and listen and see what they're saying. This will be a reassurance to you." And then he said, "If you're afraid to do that, take your servant with you. Take somebody else with you." So him and his servant went down, and he heard a dream that one of the Midianites had had. And a guy that interpreted said, "It's the sword of Gideon, and they're going to destroy the Midianites." And that just bolstered his faith and encouraged him. So God was always trying to encourage Gideon through all along. I believe God knew Gideon was going to do the work and do the things that needed to be done, but he wanted to give him that encouragement. And he'll make that encouragement available to you and I as well if we'll be open to it, if we'll be seeking it, if we'll look for it. God will strengthen our faith and encourage us just like he did Gideon and help us. Oftentimes we go through life somewhat with blinders on, and we can only see the problem that's immediately beside us or in front of us. But if we'll look around, God's at work everywhere around us, and he is still in control. We may see oppression. We may see things come upon the church and things come upon us if things don't change here in the next little while that we're not expecting and we're not looking forward to. But we can see that God is still at work all about us. He is at work in everything that's going on, even in our nation. He's still at work. So I'm thankful that he is. But we sometimes don't associate with the oppression and the things that Gideon and them were under during this time, but they were under oppression, and it was a difficult time. But here in Judges chapter number 6, verse 25, the word of God comes to Gideon again, and it came to pass the same night that the Lord said unto him, "Take thy father's young bullock, even the second bullock of 7 years old, and throw down the altar of Baal that thy father hath, and cut down the grove that is by it." So we see here the same night the same evening that Gideon placed the food on the rock and it was consumed. God came back to him and said, "I've got a mission for you. I've got something that I want you to do." And I think it's something that you and I need to take note of, that the first thing God wanted Gideon to do was to remove the idol worship that was not only in the community there and in Israel, but even in his own father's house. He said this was a Baal object or an altar that was there that belonged to his father. His father had it. So even this one that God was going to use, still his family was steeped in idol worship. And maybe he was too, even. But it was very close to him, that idol worship. It was so prevalent in the whole nation of Israel that it was right there in his own home, there beside his own father's home, a Baal idol where they would worship and give praise and glory to Baal. And also they had a grove there. Now this grove that oftentimes we think of being a grove of trees was really just a post or an object or maybe even a stump that's set up by the altar of Baal that represented Asherah, a goddess that they had for fertility. And oftentimes I guess they would put these things close together and they would worship both of them. They would do obedience to both of these pagan gods that they had. And so he was commanded to not only tear down the altar of Baal that his father had, but also to cut down the grove that was beside it. This post or this pole or whatever it was beside of it, he was supposed to take it apart, take it down, and remove all the idol worship that was in his father's house. And it was important to God to have him do that, have him remove those things. God could not be seen working in a place where idol worship was so prevalent and not condemning, and look to be condoning. And it's the same way in our lives as well. There's things in our lives that prevent God from working and doing what he wants to do in our lives. And it's important that we take care of those things. When we get those things confessed and we get those things out of our life, if we want God to truly bless us and to use us, and if we want to truly honor and glorify him, we need to do those things. And that's the first thing that God had commanded him to do, was to take care of this idol worship that was in his father's house and probably in his own life as well. And so in verse 26 it says, "And build an altar unto the Lord thy God upon the top of this rock in the ordered place, and take the second bullock and offer a burnt sacrifice with the wood of the grove which thou shalt cut down." And so there's two parts to this. One is destroying the idol worship that's in his own family's life, and then to show true worship by worshiping and honoring the one and only God, to sacrifice that bullock that he had taken from his father's stock unto God. Now, this was not a small sacrifice. This bullock was a bullock of 7 years. So this bullock would have been in its prime, and it would have been a costly sacrifice for Gideon and for his father even. But that's what God had required of him. That's what God asked him to do. And so he done all these things. Says in 27, "Then Gideon took 10 men of his servants and did as the Lord had said unto him. And so it was, because he feared his father's household and the men of the city, that he could not do it by day, that he did it by night." So a whole day transpired after he got the command from God before he actually took and done the work that God had asked him to do. No doubt idol worship was big for that community, and that altar was a central place for them. And it must have been a pretty big altar, because it took 10 of them to take it down. And no doubt he probably used that bullock to help pull some of the larger stones down. Maybe even used a bullock to pull the post out of the ground. Whatever the situation was, we're not giving any detail about how they struggled, but undoubtedly it took 10 men and him and a bullock to be able to accomplish what God had told them to do. No doubt he was familiar with the altar and familiar with the post or grove that was set up, and he knew what it would take, and he gathered 10 men of his servants to help him with it. And so they did it by night because of the fear. Now you can say what you want about Gideon, whether or not he was just a coward and didn't want to do it in broad daylight, or whatever the case is. But he did it at night, and God honored what he done, even though it was at night. It still got done. The work got accomplished. The things that God told him to do got done. God didn't command him to do it immediately. He just told him that's what he wanted done. I'm sure if God said, "Take that bullock and take 10 of your men and proceed out there, I'll protect you and watch over you," he would have probably done that as well. But in any case, he accomplished what God wanted him to do. That's the important part, is that he followed through on what God commanded him. Oftentimes we allow our own fear to keep us from doing simple tasks that God desires you and I to be involved in. Something that won't put our life in jeopardy, maybe put us to ridicule, maybe even to scorn in some people's eyes, and yet that will prevent us from doing it. We'll find out here shortly that Gideon had actually a pretty good, reasonable anticipation that he would meet some fierce opposition had he done this during the day, had he done this in broad daylight and tried to go up there and tear down this thing. They may have killed him and his 10 servants, and then the altar would have been repaired and still been there, and nothing would have been done to bring glory to God. No sacrifice would have been made. That bullock would have probably been sacrificed on that altar to Baal if he had done it in broad daylight, and they'd have seen it and came upon him, and wouldn't accomplish what God wanted accomplished. But he did accomplish what God wanted accomplished, but he did it by night. And when the men of the city arose early in the morning, behold, the altar of Baal was cast down, and the grove was cut down that was by it, and the second bullock was offered upon the altar that was built. So along this same area, no doubt these pagan worshipers, they would choose a high place to build their altars, and maybe that was beside his father's home, maybe it's just on his property or whatever, but they said it was his father's altar. But it must have been on a pretty high place that they could see it when they woke up in the morning. They didn't have to go looking for it. It must have been in a pretty prominent area for them to notice it first thing in the morning. But either way, they noticed that their altar had been completely destroyed. Another altar had been erected, and there was smoke coming off of that other altar. There had been an offering already made on the second altar that had been constructed, and their pole that they worshipped around was gone as well. It had been taken down. And so the men of that city noticed what was taking place, and that their worship of Baal had been cut down. Now, I don't know what these men feared. Baal had not helped them with the oppression that they were under. Baal had not done anything for them at all, and never could do anything for them at all. And why they never understood that is beyond me. But even in our day, in our world, and even in our nation, we see these things starting to pick up steam. We see a lot of false gods being promoted. We see a lot of false religions being propagated. We see all these things in our own nation that really benefit no one, other than maybe easing someone's conscience for the sin that they're involved in. But we see here that this was the same way here. These idol worshipers never did get what they needed. If they did get rain or they did get a bountiful harvest, it came from the Lord God. It didn't come from some idol. It didn't come from some pagan god that they were worshiping. And it's the very same thing today. Any good blessings or anything good that comes into our lives comes from the Father above, not from any worship of an idol or any sense of superstition that we may have that causes good things to happen to us. It's not karma when things go well, and it's not karma when things go bad. It's all of God, all of His planning, and all of His timing, and all working to do that that is His will for you and I. So these people saw that, and they were disturbed by that, and it concerned them that this altar had been destroyed, and then another altar had been erected. Verse 29 says, "And they said one to another, Who hath done this thing? And when they inquired and asked, they said, Gideon, the son of Joash, hath done this thing." And so they questioned among themselves, these men of the city of Ophrah, started questioning among themselves, what's happened here? What's took place? And who's done this? They wanted someone to blame. They wanted somebody to cast fault at. They wanted somebody to pay a price for what had taken place. Now, I don't know who they finally got a hold of that told them who had done it. Maybe one of the 10 servants of Joash or his father. Somebody that had knowledge of what had taken place the night before. And they told them that it was Gideon, the son of Joash, hath done this thing. Then the men of the city said to Joash, "Bring out thy son, that he may die, because he hath cast down the altar of Baal, and because he hath cut down the grove that was by it." Now these men's intention was to do away with Gideon because he had done those things. Now we're not sure why they would take such action or why they would find it to be so offensive, because we're not Baal worshipers. But we'd feel the same way if someone come and destroyed a church. Even when people go out and they push over tombstones and they make a desecration of the things that we see as sacred, we get all riled up. Now, we may not call for someone's head to be put on the spike, but we do want to see justice done. We do want to see things take place. And that's what these men thought that they were doing. They thought they were carrying out a good work for their God, for someone that they revered and someone that they held in high esteem. and they thought this was an adequate thing to do, to kill the person that's responsible for tearing down their altar. Now, if an altar can be torn down in one night, it can surely be re-erected in one day. But that was not what was in their thoughts. Their thoughts were, we've got to have retribution. We've got to take action, and we've got to destroy whoever done this. Now, Joash's father was the one that was confronted, and they asked him to turn over his son. That you need to just be compliant and turn him over to us. Now, we're not told that Joash had ever quit worshiping this idol. We're not told anything much about him as far as what his religious beliefs were, other than he had an altar to Baal that belonged to him, that was his. And so we can infer from that he was pretty prominent in this Baal worship as well. And may have, had it not been his son that was doing these things, may have been in that same group saying, we want this boy's head for what he's done. Who knows? But something has changed Joash's heart. Something has changed his mind about the power of Baal, the power of Asherah, these false gods that they were worshiping. Something had stirred him. Now, I don't know if Gideon had come home that next night, the night that God spoke to him and talked to his father and said, I've encountered the God of heaven, the God of creation, and this has happened to me, and he's wanting me to do some things. And I don't know what he may have said to his father, but something I would infer from the text that something has changed in his father's opinion of Baal as well. And it could have been the testimony of his son as to what had happened to him, because he had all day there with his father. And all day there with his family to entail them and to explain to them what God was wanting to do in his life and how God was getting ready to throw off the oppression of the Midianites. Who knows what may have taken place? We're not told in the scriptures. But Joash had a different word, had a different reply to these men than probably what they were expecting. I think they had come there calmly and said, look what's happened. And it's your son that's responsible. You need to turn him over. You know what's right. You know what the right thing is to do. And they weren't there armed or anything. But Joash, I think, had a different reply to them than probably what they were expecting or planning to receive. And Joash said unto all that stood against him, will ye plead for Baal? Will ye save him? He that will plead for him, let him be put to death whilst it is yet morning. If he be a god, let him plead for himself, because one hath cast down his altar. Now, what Joash has said makes sense. If Baal be a god, if Baal be God and Asherah be God, let them seek retribution. Are they powerless to do anything to those that destroy their altars and their places of worship? Are they powerless to take retribution on those that would turn against them and turn away from them? They were certainly experiencing retribution for how they had treated God and how they had turned away from God. They were under the oppression of the Midianites even at that very moment. As we mentioned, Gideon was having to thresh what little wheat he could find in hiding, because the Midianites would come and immediately take it away from them. So all these people were oppressed by the Midianites, and it was all the hand of God that was extended toward them that was causing it. They never even realized it. And here they are trying to take up for Baal, a false god who had never done anything to them other than cause the anger of God to fall upon them. And yet they were there to seek retribution for him. And that's why Joash said, let Baal take vengeance for himself. Let Baal be the one to take and fight this fight. Why are you having to take up arms for Baal if he is a god? Let him do it. Let him take vengeance. And those that would seek to usurp the power of a god ought to be put to death themselves. So if you're wanting to stand up and take vengeance for Baal, you're the one that's guilty of death. You're the one that ought to be put to death, because you're usurping the authority of Baal, who you believe to be a god. So his argument, I think, was legitimate, and his argument must have at least settled their mind for a little while, because we never hear anything else about it. Gideon goes on to do what Gideon was called to do, and these men, we never hear anything more from them about what they wanted to do with Gideon and what they wanted to take place then. And so he makes this statement, and he tells them that those that are seeking to fight for Baal, those that are seeking to plead for him, those are the ones that need to be put to death, and let Baal take vengeance for himself. And verse 32 says, therefore on that day he called him Jerubbaal, saying, let Baal plead against him, because he hath thrown down his altar. So he called, this is the first time that day was when Gideon was called Jerubbaal. And it must have been a significant change for Gideon, because throughout the rest of Scripture, when you hear the name Gideon, it ain't far you hear the name Jerubbaal. He and he's often referred to, and his lineage is referred to, as Jerubbaal, the sons of Jerubbaal. Not the sons of Gideon, but the sons of Jerubbaal. And they may say Jerubbaal, and then it says, who is Gideon? To let you know that they're talking about the same person. But this change, this thing that took place, and his standing up and tearing down this idol, this idol which was the post, and tearing down the altar to a false god, must have been a momentous moment for Gideon and his family, because it marked a change in his life. And so it was a marked change when he, and really it should have been, because it was probably the first thing he had ever done for God. The first act that he had ever done in command of God, in what God had commanded him to do. And it changed his life, changed his name, changed his outlook, changed his father's outlook on life. And so when we obey God and we do the things that God has asked us to do, it should make a change in our life. It should make a change in the lives of those around us. It should make a difference, even in this world that we live in, when we're faithful to do and to follow the things that God commanded us to do. It did in Jerubbaal's life. It did in Gideon's life. It did in his family's life. It made a change in his life by just following and simply obeying the will of God. So that's the way it is with all of us. If we'll follow and obey the will of God, things will change in our life. That's all we have this morning. We'll ask Jeremy, if he will, to dismiss us in a word of prayer, and then the Williams family will sing for us, and we'll go on into the preaching hour.